The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hey everyone, welcome to A Good Football Show. I am Matt Straup, and this is part two of your Week 14 Fantasy Preview Show. On part one, the crew covered the Steelers, Vikings, Bills, Bucks, Ravens, Browns, Seahawks, Texans, Raiders, Chargers, and Lions, Broncos games, so check that out if you missed it today. We are hitting the remaining eight games, and I'm joined by Pat Daugherty, Denny Carter, and Kyle Dvorak. And along those lines, the inactives came across our desk about 90 minutes before kickoff of this show, and John Daigle has been ruled out due to an internet outage. He warmed up, tried to play, but he and his router were deemed unable to go.
It seems like he tried.
I was so confused when you said that. Oh my god, there's a football game soon? I'm not ready.
I did see your face.
I have showdown lineups to set. I was like legitimately like in a
me too a little bit
that I was somehow like missing things. Like I was like, I'm just the most unprepared.
We got a blurb. We got to blurb them. Inactives. We got to blurb them. Sorry.
Remember last year we had like a Monday afternoon game. We had a Wednesday afternoon game. Wednesday I believe game, on NBC, we got stuck with like the Wednesday afternoon game because the Chargers or the Steelers couldn't stop getting the coronavirus. There was some.
Wait, I thought it was the Steelers that couldn't stop getting.
Oh, that's right. It was the Ravens.
Because but they had like just come off like a Titans rescheduling. I think they were part of the Titans mess as well. So they kept playing opponents that were getting.
There was a Tuesday night football game involving the Titans. I think Titans Cowboys. It's funny how this already feels like ancient history.
No, Bills. Bills Titans.
There might have been two.
No, Bills Ravens.
There was a Fox game I remember watching with the Titans and the Cowboys on like some random weeknight.
Well, the Titans had like a long stretch of like pretty rough. These games might not be played this year, and it's how we all know the names like Nick Westbrook Akine and Jacob or Cody Hollister, whichever one of the Hollister twins they have. Like that's how I've heard of these players because all the receivers were out. Man, those were like, we should go back to that. Last year, it felt awful, but in fact, it gave us a lot of good trivia.
We should go back to the height of the pandemic. Real good.
Great call, Kyle.
Just a bit to be clear, I don't want to watch Nick Westbrook Akine, nor do I want people to get sick, obviously.
By the way, that also, one of those games, I think, brought us a very brief but glorious Robert Griffin III renaissance, if I'm not mistaken.
It did. I believe he instantly got hurt. I think that was Wednesday afternoon football on NBC.
It was like one quarter. He was like a comet flying across the sky, though. I mean, he was running. He was doing everything. Yeah. I was like, he's back, baby. And then, of course, he got hurt, as you said.
Do you remember the game was Wednesday because we had the tree lighting at Rockefeller Center. And, you know, like that contract's like ironclad. So we had to do the game in the afternoon. So that's how we got the glory of Robert Griffin III suffering a hamstring explosion on Wednesday afternoon during the football season.
His first carry was toward the sideline, and you were like, oh, he's learned his lesson for sure. He's going to step out of bounds. And he turns it upfield at the last second, yes. And then a defender just picks him up and throws him 10 yards out of bounds. And you're like, oh, okay, so it's back to this. You haven't learned anything from the downfall of your career. Okay.
It's funny, of all the iconic COVID games, though, the most still did occur on a Sunday. It wasn't Tuesday night, Wednesday afternoon, where you know what the iconic COVID
Kendall
game was,
Hinton?
Right? Yes, Kendall Hinton.
Oh, God, Kendall Hinton. Oh,
that was the moment of the season, was Kendall Hinton versus Taysom Hill, folks, who we'll get to in a minute. Am I right?
Yes, we will. Anyways, hope that John's internet gets well. Just want to wish John and his internet the best. We'll see you back here soon, buddy.
We're all thinking about you. Yeah, should have got Comcast. He doesn't have Comcast, for the record. That's, and this wouldn't be happening if he had Comcast.
I didn't even know there were other providers. Yeah, honestly,
there's not.
Actually, no, there is, because the one he has is out, and I won't name names. But
right. There's the one.
Won't name names.
At a minimum, there's one other one.
Yeah.
I love Comcast.
All right, 8 games to hit, as I said. The first one we're going to get to is the Cowboys at Washington. Dallas favored by 4, a total of 47.5 here. Now, let's start in this Dallas backfield. Last week, we saw Zeke turn 15 touches into a mind-numbing 47 yards. At the same time, we saw Tony Pollard turn his 9 touches into 74 yards, including a long touchdown. Pollard missed practice, though, with a foot injury, which we now know is a torn plantar fascia. So, considering that the more explosive back is now injured and the lead back is already injured and laboring through it, Pat, how do you approach this backfield?
Well, yeah, if there's one thing I know about plantar fascia, it's not painful at all to play through. And, you know, it's like having like a hangnail, basically. It's not it is maybe like the most painful injury that players like routinely play through. And he's going to give it a go at some point this season, because this is an injury that takes like months to get better and not weeks. So at some point this season, Tony Pollard will be playing through his torn plantar fascia, but I don't think it's going to be this week. They're calling him a game time decision. He's saying he's still in extreme pain a week after the fact. Like, it's, you know, the Cowboys, like, they can't take any game for granted at this point. You know, they've dropped a few. They have to like treat every game as like a must win at this point, as they like jockey for playoff positioning. But you'd have to assume they're going to give him a blow against the football team, even though the football team has been hot. They're going to gamble they can win without him. And that leaves Zeke, who, you know, is playing hurt too. Ian Rappaport, though, said it was more of a ligament issue than a bone bruise. I don't really know like why that's better, though. And Zeke has not cleared.
Thank God, we were all worried.
Zeke's high for rushing the past 6 games is 51 yards. Exceeded 15 carries one time in his past 6 games. But if Tony Pollard doesn't play, or even if Tony Pollard's limited, it's kind of hard to see how Zeke doesn't finally reach 20 carries. This seems like it'll be like a slobber knocker of a game. And if Pollard sits, I'm going to get Zeke more like the low-end RB1 territory where he has not been in a while. And if Pollard plays, I'm going to have Pollard ranked lower than usual. You know, he had been in the top 30. Like, I'm having more like on that flex borderline, like the RB34 to 38 range.
I, for one, about the Dallas backfield, think that if you give Zeke Elliott 45 touches, he's gonna crack, you know, 50 yards for sure, you know, and I think,
you know, it's funny. I thought Pat was making a joke. He's like, you know, Now we can be sure that he will get over 20. And he said touches. I thought he was going to say yards.
Right. Yeah. Right. And
we're in, you know, the sunken place right now.
He's down bad.
He is down bad. Also, the Washington defense is very exploitable through the air. So we could see the Cowboys kind of take a pass heavy approach. We know that the Cowboys tailor their game plan according to the opponent's defensive weaknesses. So we could see that. But with Pollard out, yeah, I mean, Zeke becomes too big to fail.
So as for that Cowboys passing game, if they do try to go that route that we just referenced, let's look at Amari Cooper coming off a game of 2 catches, 2 targets for 41 yards. Only played 34% of the snaps in his first game back from the COVID list. Kyle, how much faith do you have in Cooper getting it going again, snap count going up, et cetera, against the football team here in week 14?
Yeah, I mean, even Mike McCarthy came out and said he doesn't see any reason why they wouldn't ramp him up to his full snap share. And we saw early in the year, he had 2 games over 100 yards. He scored, I believe, 5 touchdowns for the first 6 or 7 weeks. He was typical Amari Cooper, even if he had probably more pressure from CeeDee Lamb. But if we assume he's up to a full snap load, which is exactly what McCarthy said, yeah, you kind of have to put him in that wide receiver 2 range. This is a really good matchup as far as the passing attack goes. I mean, the Washington football team is 30th in passing yards per game allowed, and they're 28th in passing yards per attempt. So it's not only that teams throw on them, but they throw quite efficiently. So for me, like, now that we at least have some idea that Amari Cooper should be back to, even if he's not back to a full snap load, even if it just increases from last week to maybe 2/3, 3/4, right? At that point, you're pretty comfortable saying he's like a low-end wide receiver 2. If you give him the complete, like, you know, 90%+ of snaps and routes on those snaps, yeah, you kind of have to say he's like top 20. He could even push for 15 because he still is a really talented player. I think at this point you kind of have to rank CD as the wide receiver 1, but that doesn't mean there's not space for 2 wide receiver 2s, like high-end wide receiver 2s or a low-end wide receiver 1 in CD, which is where I have him.
Yeah, CD's in the top 10. I think Gallup and Cooper, you kind of just slot in the wide receiver 20 to 30 range with hopefully some humility that you don't really know which one is like the better play this week. And I'm leaning on like history and keep having Amari Cooper higher than Michael Gallup. And I think So I think they're all safely top 30. One question for me is like, Blake Jarwin has obviously been out for a while, which solidified Dalton Schultz's snap share at least. But this is like maybe the first time all season where Dalton Schultz has had to deal with a fully healthy CeeDee Lamb, Amari Cooper, and Michael Gallup. So I was kind of wondering where to rank Dalton Schultz, but it's such a dire scene at tight end that I kept him in like that tight end 7 to 9 range.
Yeah, I don't have my rankings up in front of me, but I think that's exactly where I have him. I think he kind of is headlining the guys who we are not supremely confident in, but have better odds of getting, say, 6 catches, better odds of scoring a touchdown, like that Dawson Knox style, than the lower end. Like, they're out there playing a lot. That's like the Ricky Seals-Jones, James O'Shaughnessy type of players. He's clearly in the tier that separates the, we'll give it a try, and then the elite options, or at least the very good options.
It's like the elite option and the not totally awful tier.
Yes.
Is like a large one.
Yeah.
So on the other side of things, Terry McLaurin, a quiet couple of weeks, 4 for 51 and 3 catches for 22 yards last week. Both of those 17 to 15 thrillers for the football team. Can he bounce back against Dallas Denny, a team that historically, if you care about that at all, he's been good against?
He has. And, you know, the peripherals for Terry McLaurin, everything says that he should be at least a top 10 option weekly, and yet he is the wide receiver 20 after week 13. He's fourth in weighted opportunity rating, only behind Devontae Adams, Deontay Johnson, and DJ Moore. He's fourth in air yards in the league. He's seventh in targets per route run. I mean, it looks wonderful. If you were to earn fantasy points for peripherals, Terry McLaurin would be elite. Unfortunately, he has not converted a lot of those air yards, and that is the issue. The other issue, of course, is that Washington, since his bye week, has found a successful formula, and that successful formula does not involve Terry McLaurin all that much. They are running at a high rate. Washington has the third lowest pass rate in the league since week 9. The hope here, I think the only hope for some volume for McLaurin is that Dallas is favored here, even though they're in Washington. Not that matters. I mean, there will be no football team fans there. I can guarantee you that. I mean, it'll be 75% Dallas fans. Dallas is favored here, and they're the ninth most extreme pass funnel this season. Dallas is not bad against the pass, by the way. This doesn't mean that they're exploitable. They're actually quite good against the pass per expected points added. So McLaurin doesn't have a good matchup, but his upside would come with Washington having kind of abandoned that very run heavy approach here. If they're able to stick to what they want to do, though, which I think is an important note here, McLaurin will continue to struggle, I think, to be a wide receiver too.
Yeah, Denny, he's averaging under 7 targets per game since their week 9 bye, and kind of like that run heavy line of demarcation for the football team. So the Cowboys, they do allow big plays, but like you said, they have rated out pretty well on the whole against the pass.
Before we leave this game behind, I wanted to give you a chance to tell us where we're at in this Washington football team tight end room in the wake of the Logan Thomas injury, because I know this is a topic near and dear to your heart.
Appreciate it so much that you throw the sicko tight end options my way. We have a sicko tight end play here. I don't even think it's sicko. I think this is just a good process play. Ricky Seals-Jones is back to running all the routes, getting all the snaps for Washington with Logan Thomas out with some sort of knee injury. We're still not sure what it is exactly, but Logan Thomas will miss this week. So before Ricky Seals-Jones' week 10 injury against Tampa, where he hurt his hip in the first half, Seals-Jones trailed only Travis Kelce in tight end pass routes from week 5 to 8. He ran a route on a dazzling 92% of Washington's dropbacks over that stretch. Like I said, you know, all the routes, that's what the Washington, even John Bates, you know, the elite John Bates saw the same sort of treatment. Seals-Jones dominated red zone targets in Washington's offense this year. He has 11 looks inside the 20-yard line, which leads the team by a good margin. This is all to say that it's not a good matchup. Dallas is tough against tight ends, but he'll be out there a ton, and you could do way worse than RSJ.
I will say it is worth noting RSJ has yet to get in a full practice with his hip injury. He is practicing, but he's yet to get in a full practice. And he's going to be active, but maybe it won't be like the every down thing. Like Washington is typically down with the tight ends, and it could be some bait season. But all year, they've preferred an every down tight end. And so Denny is most likely right about RSJ's setup.
Yeah, as Denny was saying, it's not a good matchup. It's not particularly a good player, given how many teams have signed and then, you know, released him after a year. You know, it's not a good offense. It's not a healthy player either. But those are just a few minor things standing in his way. Now, I do agree, though. Like, of the streamer tight ends, like, I would probably take him over, like, James O'Shaughnessy, which is, like, somehow that's, like, got to be the other premier streamer. They're just, you know, all the good ones have been sucked up at this point. Oh, yeah. So
he's not even a streamer. He's top five. It goes Andrews, Kittle, Gronk, Travis Kelce, and then James O'Shaughnessy.
Yeah.
Well, jeez. Oh, yeah.
I thought you were going to say a young Gronk without talent. In that he plays tight end.
All right. Next up is the Falcons at the Panthers. Carolina favored by 2.5, a total of 42.5. The Panthers, as you know by now, fired Joe Brady. And, of course, they've lost Christian McCaffrey for the year. Kyle, are you expecting a ground heavy approach here from the Panthers moving forward, and in particular this week? And does that mean Chuba Hubbard getting the bulk of that work? Are we looking at some sort of a messy committee?
I don't think we'll see much of a committee in terms of the actual rushing attack, and that's exactly why we don't have Joe Brady in the fold anymore. Is the tweet from ESPN's David Newton was that they wanted to run the ball, like Rule wanted to run the ball 30 plus times a game, which is insane, especially, like, you know, given the circumstances of having Christian McCaffrey constantly injured. Like, sure, if you had Christian McCaffrey, I don't think it's optimal, but you can at least convince yourself that you want to run the ball a lot. But you were on your backup running back at that point. To me, it was a bit, you know, it's asking a lot from Brady, who also engineered an incredible passing attack in college. That's what he was known for. So I thought that was pretty insane, but it makes sense that if that's your philosophical belief, why you wouldn't want Brady in the fold anymore. So yeah, I think they come out and attempt to run the ball a lot. I think that happens with Hubbard. The only concern is that I do think Hubbard is pretty much drawing dead as a pass catcher. In the past three games where we had either no or less than half the snaps for CMC, Hubbard had 5 targets on 20 routes, whereas Amir Abdullah, who joined like in the middle of the season and initially was just like a kick returner, I think, got 49 routes and 15 targets in those three games. It was like New England game where they kind of benched people towards the end, Miami where CMC left, and then I think Atlanta CMC didn't play. So in the recent sample of games we have with this backfield, it's very clear they have a between the tackles grinder in Hubbard and a pass catcher in Abdullah. If they want to run the football a lot, that makes Hubbard like a viable RB2. But I think he like just scratches the surface of RB2.
The whole idea with Hubbard was that he would take on that like Mike Davis role from 2020, where, you know, you just fall into a bunch of volume, become pretty game script proof, not game script. Game script. Don't Google that. But you know, and that's not the
game script.
That's not the situation now. With Abdullah
scooped.
In the fold.
No, it's scooped.
So, meanwhile, Pat, we saw Cam Newton before the bye had that 5-for-21 passing debacle. We know that the Falcons defense, as much as I love them, are a unit that will cure all that ails you. Can we go back to Cam as, you know, a fringe QB1 in this truly delicious matchup?
Yeah, we can. It's the week of having to go back to dual threats who are not impressive whatsoever in their last start. It's kind of because we have no choice. It's the mallet finger, Taysom Hill, and then the 5-of-21, Cam Newton. And you know, Cam's presence is another reason to be kind of worried about Chuba. The Panthers seemed like they were kind of over, not as you guys were laying out, like the every down Chuba experience before Christian McCaffrey's most recent return. That I think in his very last game in place of CMC, it kind of swung back the other way. But it definitely seems like we're going to get a lot of Amir Abdullah on passing downs. And then we should get a lot of Cam Newton near the goal line. And so in terms of his Cam overall as a streamer, the Falcons allow the second most QB fantasy points. They've allowed the fourth most quarterback rushing yards this season. We know that the run commitment is going to be there for the team that literally just fired their offensive coordinator for not running enough. So you know, the 5-of-21 for Cam too, no real positive way to spin that, but there were some big drops early in that game from DJ Moore where it could have maybe been a different game against a really, really tough pass defense, the Miami Dolphins. The Atlanta Falcons are not a really tough pass defense. And as shot as Cam's arm continues to look, you've got to go back yet to that borderline QB1 and like high-end streamer land with Cam Newton.
Yeah, envision Cam Newton in a very clean pocket come Sunday, regardless of what else happens. That's what you get when you play the Falcons. And as for Atlanta, this offense struggled mightily the last time they played the Panthers back in Week 8. That was a 19-13 loss. But this past week against Tampa, Russell Gage is coming off of a game of 12 targets, 11 catches, 130 yards. Those last two numbers are career highs. Danny, this feels a little strange to say, but is Gage approaching like no-brainer wide receiver three territory in fantasy right now?
That can't be true, but it is. Pat and I talked a little bit on Monday about how the wide receiver landscape is looking pretty ugly compared to what we're used to, especially with teams committing so heartily to the run. So Russell Gage, yeah, I think he does profile as a PPR wide receiver three. He has 27 targets over three games, good for a team-leading 28% target share over that span. He leads the Falcons by a wide margin in targets per route run. The only issue, I think, here is that Carolina is among the most extreme run funnel defenses. Although, and Matt, maybe you can fill me in, I'm not sure that matters against the Falcons. I'm not sure if they can establish against Carolina.
For Mike Davis carries, I am going to be quite upset. Like, physically, it will start making me quite sick because I can't stand the fact that any of their non-Cordarrelle Patterson players, and like, in outside of Kyle Pitts and Cordarrelle Patterson, I don't think another player on this team should have a touch.
I will say
on the entire year.
Go ahead, Pat. You will say your thing first. We'll both say.
I will say it never made sense that like the PPR scam wasn't working with Russell Gage. They need targets so badly. That's always been what he's done. It was like bizarre that he wasn't catching 5 or 6 passes a game. And now three straight games, he's had at least 5 catches on at least 7 targets. That should keep up pretty much every week out the rest of the season.
The Falcons were able to run a little bit against Tampa. They did get the ground game going a little bit. Cordarrelle, I think, had 13 carries for 78 yards. And I will say Mike Davis looked a little bit frisky in that game. He had some life, whereas he looked kind of sluggish in some other games. I thought he looked all right on his 8-ish touches or whatever.
that's a generous. It looked a little like the old retread running back he's been for the past 4 years in a handful of every game outside of that.
I feel bad making fun of Mike Davis after seeing the video of him being nominated for Walter Payton Man of the Year.
Also, after seeing his quads, yeah, dude.
Well, that's
everyone forgets that he had giant quads in the offseason. That's a very important thing. That
your soul is supposed to be dead. You're not supposed to be affected by those kind of things.
I mean, this guy, Mike Davis, is an emotional man, and it showed in that video. I actually felt bad about being a CPAT truther after watching that video.
I also read on The Athletic recently that he and Cordarrelle Patterson are basically best friends. So I don't know. Ugh. That may throw things off. Denny, that may be fodder for a future
adjust the ranks.
Just keep that in mind. As we move now away from Atlanta, I want to stay here all day, but we can't, guys. We got to go. Next up, it's the Jags at the Titans. Tennessee favored by 9, a total of 43.5. We get a lot of squeaky wheel wide receiver situations. Because this is the Jags, we have a squeaky wheel where it's the running back, James Robinson, and the quarterback, Trevor Lawrence, is taking his demands semi-public that the running back needs to be on the field after multiple fumble-related, we think, benchings. We think they were fumble-related. They happened to come after a fumble. No one else in Jacksonville knows what was going on aside from that. Anyways, Pat, we know the Jags are a mess. How do you sort out the situation for Robinson? Because I think anyone who has him on their roster really needs him at this point.
Yeah, it's always good when you have to squeaky wheel the only good player in your offense. And you're just running your offense really well when everyone's like, is there some reason we're not giving the only good player the ball ever? And like, always really good when like the very diplomatic young running back goes on the radio and is basically just like looking around like, hold me, like I can't lie. And like any answer will make my head coach look like a complete idiot. And like, he didn't want to do that. And he tried desperately not to do that. And he still kind of made Urban Meyer look like a complete idiot. And then Urban Meyer himself made himself look like a complete idiot when he acted like, the running backs coach decide who gets the ball. You know, like I'm not getting paid $11 million a year to decide things like that. So not sure what's going on. And yeah, the cherry on top of everything, like your young quarterback who is having an historically bad season. You know, I'm sure he's not wanting to make waves. He's not that kind of player in general, but or Trevor Lawrence would be like, yeah, you know, maybe we should get this guy the ball because I'm bad. Everyone else in the offense is bad. Maybe we should get it to the good player. So I'm thinking that is going to happen this week. Tennessee Titans are not a great running back matchup. They're bottom five in fantasy points allowed. The Titans, you know, are 8.5-point favorites. The setup is bad. But before this fumbling mystery, he had been almost a lock for 18 to 20 weekly touches for James Robinson. And it's hard to see how we don't end up back right in the territory.
Oh, man, I just can't imagine being like a Jaguars fan and having listened to that. Because like Pat was very kind. And so was like James Robinson. Like, he was very diplomatic. He was like, yeah, you know, it's always, I didn't even look up at the clock right to see how much time was left in the game, but. And then the questions kept like cornering him into saying like, yeah, I guess I don't really get why me being hurt and down 30 points, like, you know, as Pat alluded to. But man, I just can't imagine being a Jaguars fan and like, let alone watching football games, but then having to listen to us talk about the Jaguars because it is, man, oh, it's bad.
Oh, it's bad. I'm still laughing about what Pat said, you know, picturing Trevor Lawrence coming up to Urban Meyer and being like, look, Urban, I'm bad.
And then Urban's like,
I'm awful. Treadwell.
Like, down bad.
Like, are you not seeing this? I'm horrific. Can we just hand it off more to our guy?
Yeah, just the whole thing just becomes exponentially more bizarre with, like you said, Laquon Treadwell just getting peppered with targets right now. It truly is a bizarre world we're living in right now.
Well, yeah, are you guys familiar with the concept of remembering some guys? You know, this started back with the original non-zombie Deadspin. They would just go, let's remember some guys. And they would take out old cards and be like, wow, I haven't seen this guy in forever. That's basically what Urban Meyer does every week at wide receiver. He remembers some guys at wide receiver.
He remembers some guys.
Tavon Austin, Laquon Treadwell, Jamal Agnew. He is remembering the hell out of guys this year.
They're going to be – they have that remember for like a week, I assume the Falcons had a first round pick at like every position, right? In this summer. Cause they, or it, was it last year where they had like Treadwell was on the team at last that point. Year. So they, and then they had like retread guards that were first round picks. The Jags feel like they're about 6 months from recreating that with obviously like retread Tavon Austin, Treadwell type stuff.
Yeah. It works really well. I highly recommend it. That is a tried and true. If you can just get a first round label attached to a guy, you're good.
That's what the Patriots do. It's just everybody's just following suit.
The Titans, before the bye, you may not remember this, but they got 100-yard games from Deonte Foreman and Dontrell Hilliard in the same game. A game they lost, I think, 36-13, but never mind that. Now they get back Jeremy McNichols, complicating things a little bit here, Kyle. How are you approaching these Titans running backs in Week 14? Because I know, for one, I want to get excited about Dontrell Hilliard, had that 68-yard run, but do we have to tap the brakes in a major way here?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, I wanted to see one more game of Dontrell Hilliard, but I'm really not sure we do. Like, they, like, McNichols wasn't just a guy they bring in to use after Derrick Henry goes down. Like, he was legitimately splitting snaps, not getting a ton of carries because you don't give anyone else on the team carries when you have Derrick Henry, but he was playing around 30% of the snaps through 5 weeks. He was averaging 4.6 targets. You take away like the 12 target game when they had no receivers and they peppered him a bunch, and he was still, I believe, right around 3 targets per game. He was very clearly, when they had the league's best running back, still playing on a ton of snaps, a ton of primarily third down and passing down stuff. The usage he saw early in the season makes me pretty convinced that he's their third down sort of scat back type of player. And that's what Dontrell Hilliard is. And I think, unfortunately, Dontrell Hilliard looked good. He had the one really long run that I believe basically got him to 100 yards on the day already versus New England. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's going to matter, just given our history of the team using Jeremy McNichols. Unfortunately, I think he just kind of pushes Hilliard out. And they have the same dynamic that Hilliard and Foreman had, but it's Hilliard and McNichols. And given how bad the offense has looked since they lost Derrick Henry, I mean, they're not doing the Titan stuff anymore. They're not doing like the high play action rate stuff, which would still probably work without Derrick Henry. They're just not playing that Titans brand of high efficiency football. So I'm not really sure like either running back is anything more than like RB3, 4 borderline, because I just don't have faith in the offense.
They should listen to Nick Sirianni about the play action. You said it would probably work even without Derrick Henry. Nick Sirianni said that. He said, it doesn't matter who's back there. Play action works. We're going to use it. You know, listen up, Titans.
So everyone else is similarly, is everyone feeling the same way as Kyle about the Hilliard McNichols dynamic?
Not necessarily. I think honestly that McNichols might be the one who gets iced out, but it's just such a volatile situation. Dontrell Hilliard, you had a history as a pass catching back, and I feel like the Titans spent weeks trying to find their post-Henry formula, And even though it was with McNichols, like, you know, out with the concussion, I feel like they're not going to want to mess with like the success they finally had in week 12, but I'm just guessing.
Right.
And McNichols has been there longer, obviously, than both, and much bigger part of the system than they were. So I wouldn't be shocked at all if Kyle was right and McNichols comes in as immediately like the third down back again. But my initial feel of the situation is that McNichols will like get some third down work, but they're going to try to stick with this Foreman Hilliard 1-2 punch. But I'm just guessing.
Bottom line is you're gambling if you play Dontrell Hilliard this week, yeah. Because ideally it would
feels like a very low upside gamble too. Like what your best bet is that like, if you believe Pat that like they really do, which would make sense. They had 200 yard rushers. Like they want to just straight up. They just don't play McNichols. You're really hoping for like a really outlier performance. Like we got with them versus New England, you're more likely to get, you know, Hilliard gets 3 catches for 20 yards and then 10 carries for 30 yards. Cause they're not an efficient attack anymore. Like 9 PPR points. He finds the end zone, he gets you to 15 or whatever, but it feels like a gambling that has only downside.
There is like one path where, you know, they're huge favorites, but the Jags, like one strength as a team is also run defense. So like it's feels ultimately low upside.
And quickly before we move to the Tennessee passing game, like how high is Foreman for you, or how low should I say in your rankings this week, Pat? Where do you have Foreman?
He's in like the mid-range, like RB3 flex, where I'm kind of going back and forth with these guys, like the RB like 29 to like 34 range. That's where the Foreman will be the highest. He'll be parked probably around RB32. I mean, that's where he is right now in my rankings, and that's like one where I feel like I'm gonna have to keep updating. But that's probably the safest of the three ranks that's gonna stay the same is Deontay Foreman in like the mid-range flex.
Yeah, I think we can all agree that we don't think Foreman's role changes. He's their primary back on first and second downs. Now, the way they've been playing and the fact that Jacksonville has, like, we know their defense isn't good, but that's because they give it up through the air. It's probably not the most valuable. I have him almost in the exact same spot. I have him at 29, and I don't think my opinion of him changes too much. It's if we get any sort of update on the McNichols-Hilliard split is really, that's where, like, the ambiguity
comes in.
All right,
you said Jacksonville gives it up through the air. Ryan Tannehill had 93 passing yards before the bye, his lowest number since taking over as the Titans starter. It's still a little bit up in the air whether they get Julio Jones back from that hamstring injury this week, although I guess things are looking positive overall. He practiced again Thursday. Denny, I guess kind of a two-part question here, and you go multiple directions with this. Number one, are you throwing Julio into fantasy lineups if he plays coming off the injury? And overall, like, are you feeling as miserable as I am about this Titans passing game in general? It's kind of a two-pronged, divergent question there, if that makes sense.
Yes, I'll do my best here. Pat actually shamed me into liking Julio this week if he plays with A.J. Brown. And it makes sense. You know, I mean, where else is the ball going to go? The issue is that Julio could easily see like a 30% target share against Jacksonville. And that works out to 7 targets. You know, Tennessee has not stopped establishing since Derrick Henry was lost for the season. They have the 4th lowest pass rate over expectation since week 10. Since week 10, Tennessee has a 41% pass rate while leading. Okay, while in the lead, that's the 3rd lowest in the league behind only the Eagles and the 49ers. You know, I know that Jacksonville, like you guys said, doesn't have the worst run defense. But if the Titans get ahead, there's really no reason to think that they're, you know, going to press the pedal in the passing game. It would seem that they would keep it on the ground as much as possible. Saying that, you know, I think you play Julio hoping or trusting that he falls into some volume here with A.J. Brown out, with nobody else really challenging him for targets.
Okay, the Saints are at the Jets. New Orleans favored by 5.5, a total of 43 in this one, according to our friends at PointsBet. Alvin Kamara is looking likely to return for New Orleans. How high does he immediately vault for you among running backs this week, Pat? And how do you feel about this matchup and this player coming back?
You know, based on the Saints' 2021 history, I don't feel great about it, but I've got him immediately back in the top 10 where – the Jets allow the most running back fantasy points. They've given up the 3rd most rushing yards. We've seen them break every kind of slump there is this year. They break receiving slumps. They break rushing slumps. They break tight end production slumps. And it sticks in everyone's head, the lack of chemistry between Taysom Hill and Alvin Kamara last year. That was a bit overblown. And it's just a totally different situation this year and this week. I mean, we know the Saints have essentially 0 wide receivers. Now Taysom can barely throw with, you know, he's part of this mallet finger craze. Every teen in America is trying to suffer mallet finger, and he's going to have to track down a lot. And the Jets they've allowed the fifth most running back receptions. Mark Ingram's on the COVID-19 list and unlikely to play. It's just hard to see how, even, you know, in their ideal world, I'm sure they wouldn't be giving Kamara so much work coming off the injury, but it's just impossible to see how he doesn't get a monstrous touch total and how he doesn't produce RB1 numbers against the Jets.
Yeah, this could be a very big comeback game for Alvin Kamara. It was weird. He practiced all last week. They're all limited sessions, but like at this point in the season, players don't practice Wednesday just as a routine, even if they're healthy. It's like, no, we don't practice on Wednesdays. So for him to get all limited and then not play makes me think they're trying to just hold him out to get him back to 100%. And as you said, without Mark Ingram, we know the Jets, I believe, give the most overall touches to opposing running backs. The Saints, despite being pretty bad at football at this point, are still 5.5-point favorites. It feels like this could be like 25 to 30 touches for Kamara. So I think, especially if we get no Mark Ingram, which it's still possible that we do get Mark Ingram, right? It's not completely ruled out yet.
It's not ruled out. Case,
yeah.
But Ty Montgomery during the pod was placed on the COVID-19 list. So,
oh, thank you for that's
would,
good to
would
know.
Appear the novel coronavirus is going around the Saints running back room.
Yeah. Oh man, that is tough. So yeah, this could be an insane amount of touches for Alvin Kamara, given that I believe he's probably close as players can get to being healthy at this point in the season. They're big favorites. Their opponent gives up the most touches to opposing running backs, and their quarterback is, like, you know, I assume one of his hands is just going to be placed in a club for this game. So it seems like there's a very real argument that he's the RB1 this week, because I have no clue what we'll see from Dalvin Cook. Jonathan Taylor's on bye, obviously no CMC. So we're kind of out of potential RB1 overalls. He could be the next man up.
So we've talked about Taysom Hill not being able to throw. I mean, just some comically awful interceptions last week. If you started in fantasy and watched that game, it was truly a miserable experience. But I mean, eventually he ultimately got there through the late 70-yard touchdown pass, et cetera. I mean, we got to go back to the well here, though, don't we, Denny? Nine fingers or no? Like, I mean, you're firing up Taysom Hill as a QB1 against the Jets, right?
You know, I don't know how much we can quantify the mallet finger situation, but he rushed 11 times last week for 101 yards. You know, he didn't even really get that red zone or inside of the 10-yard line action that we're used to him getting, and I think that will come, especially with the Saints down so many guys, some would say down bad, this week.
Against... Say,
you guys have gotten this into my head now. I really thought that right when Denny.
I'm sorry. Denny said, well, I actually blame that. Yeah, and so, you know, we didn't even see that last week. We could see that. We should see that this week against the Jets. The Jets are an everything funnel defense, thankfully. You could do whatever you want. You know, if you want to establish a run, you go ahead. If you want to torch him through the air, you can do that as well. So, yeah, I think, Taysom, where do you have him ranked, Pat? Is he top 10?
It's a QB10, and, like, all you have to know, yeah. I mean, it was just maybe conservative. So you see that passing performance, and he didn't even have a rushing touchdown, and he still finished as a QB1. So, like, yeah, over 100 yards on the ground. It's just, we keep using the phrase too big to fail, but he is basically too big to fail in fantasy, despite his finger being too big to grip a football.
I mean, we talked, you know, the interceptions were laughable, but I mean, he was pretty electric running the football. Like, some of those runs were somewhat inspired, and it was kind of funny that New Orleans, like, went away from that. I mean, I guess they didn't want to give him 25 carries, but legitimately, like, Dallas had no answer for that.
But you don't hurt your franchise Gunner. And the Saints have been adamant about that. That hurt their franchise Gunner.
We know the Jets defense is very forgiving. With the aforementioned Taysom Hill football throwing issues, Kyle, are we messing around with any Saints pass catchers?
This sounds like a recipe for failure. I looked up Traquan Smith averaging 6.8 targets over his previous four games against a terrible Jets defense. That's not nothing, but like, are you really even in contention at this point if you're starting Traquan Smith? Like, I think I'm talking to people who are just fighting for pride at this point. It's not a truly horrific play. I mean, we talked about we're playing Terry McLaurin also averaging like almost the exact same amount of targets. Now, Terry McLaurin is a lot better than Traquan Smith, but Traquan Smith gets a good matchup this week. They also are without Deontay Harris, who is suspended for the next three games. So, I mean, that's something. But also last week, Harris and Lil Jordan Humphrey were the players who scored the touchdown. So it seems like at best you can say that there's a some target floor to Tre'Quan Smith, more like a target share floor on a team that actually is just going to run the football. He's like wide receiver 5-6. I think I have him ranked, which says something that he is in the, like, he exists in my brain somewhere. He has real estate there, but that's about it. It's like a very small, like New York style apartment.
Like one of those micro apartments, like, you know, some people live in basically what's a closet. Are we talking about that size or just like a one bedroom studio?
Yeah, like, yeah, studio. I don't know. What is a micro apartment? Is it smaller or larger?
This is a great YouTube wormhole to go down, like tiny New York City apartments. There's some really amazing stuff out there. Creative solutions. Some people.
It's the smallest one of them.
Yeah, okay, gotcha. It's a closet.
If micro apartments are smaller than studio apartments, then it's a micro apartment. Because like he's like wider.
We're talking like toilet above like the stove.
Yeah, amazing, amazing solutions. Exactly. Yeah, the bed. You're like hanging.
Yeah, he's that. Then he's that.
Yeah.
Can I ask, Kyle? I told that online. I'm living rent free in your head, so I don't know if that applies here.
I would say I haven't gotten a check, so I guess he is living rent free.
We're monitoring Elijah Moore's status. He didn't practice Wednesday with a quad injury. Do we know if anything happened while we sat down to record?
He did not practice again on Thursday, Matthew Straub. So I have several teams that could be down bad if Elijah Moore, who has been carrying them, is out for the final week of the fantasy regular season.
Crazier things have happened, though, than him returning to a limited practice on Friday and actually playing this game, right? Mm-hmm. We can agree on that. So let's live in that world for a minute. And Danny, if that happens, how does this matchup look for the Jets' number one target?
Yeah, so Elijah Moore over the past few weeks has an elite target share, an elite air yard share. Just to give you an idea, since week 10, only five receivers have a higher share of their team's air yards than Elijah Moore. Last week, he went over 200 air yards against the Eagles. I watched that game against the Eagles and nearly came down with a couple really big plays that would have put him over the top. As it was, he had a really solid day against Philadelphia. The Saints are allowing the fifth most fantasy points to wide receivers. I suppose they'll probably, you know, focus their efforts on stopping Elijah Moore, but it's very clear. And we were talking about this on Monday's pod a little bit, how it's very clear that the team has committed to Elijah Moore as their offensive centerpiece. So if he plays and gets, you know, full complement of snaps, which I don't know how likely that seems at the moment, but you got to feel great about plugging him in against New
Orleans. I feel great, but he's been like a top five receiver for like the past
great
five
feels
or
like
six
a stretch. Feet. His quarterback is still god awful. I mean, this is
ball.
Like, it's just. But those, how many of those games, I think the most recent two were Zach Wilson games. Before that, oh man, if you get him with the Josh Johnson connection, with the Mike White connection, with the Joe Flacco connection, fire me up for that 30% target share. But he feels very Brandon.
I was going to say, he's good enough for literally four different quarterbacks diagnosed him as the number one weapon this year. So he does have that going.
No, he is good. This is not a he's not good thing. I want to be very clear. I think he was one of the most talented receivers coming out of this class. And I was very excited to see him with a young quarterback. Now I am very much not, because still he averaged 6.4 yards per target last week. It was easily his best game with Zach Wilson under center. It was his first time getting over six. He had more games with negative yards per target. Negative, literal negative yards per target with Zach Wilson under center. He was so good with the other quarterbacks. So I think you're still playing him, right? But I think it's very Brandon Cooksian, where if the offense completely collapses, which it has done time and time again against Zach Wilson, like, you got to kind of live with that.
There's also the issue of the Jets defense being completely unable to get off the field. And that hampered the Jets offense last week, you know, and they had a nice first half. They scored, I think, three touchdowns in the first half. But as soon as the Eagles could, you know, focus on dominating time of possession, establishing the run against the Jets, they had no answer for that. So these games can, or this inability of the Jets defense to get off the field can really limit the Jets offense, obviously.
I do think Mr. Mallet Finger will help make this like a 50-50 possession game, hopefully. And if he's out, if Elijah Moore's out, Ryan Griffin appears to be out. Corey Davis is out for the year. So you're kind of down to Mr. Jamison Crowder getting like 10 or 12 of the emptiest PPR targets you'll ever see in your life. So
Pat, you firing up Kenny Yeboah? Isn't that your guy?
Is he been promoted back to the 53-man roster?
Well,
that would be nice. That'd be huge.
Well,
that would be huge.
I slacked that he had a blocked punt within the past month. I remember writing up that slack and it's like, Pat's going to like this. He'll be happy.
Because he,
well, yeah, he I missed came that in actually.
When Ryan
yeah.
Griffin went down with
free
an ankle
Kenny
injury.
Yabo. Free Kenny
Yabo. Did he Yabo do something last in, week? I believe you saw one target. So he has
the longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
That going for him.
All right, four games down, four to go. First, we're going to take a very quick break. I want to remind you to subscribe to NBC Sports Edge Plus and get every tool for every game. Now, all of our premium tools for fantasy, DFS, and betting are included in one subscription at one low price. You can subscribe monthly or save 20% on an annual subscription. We made it easier than ever with more tools than ever to play and wager with confidence with NBC Sports Edge Plus. The Giants at the Chargers. PointsBet has the Chargers as 10-point favorites. Shocking to me with in a game where it's going to be Mike Glennon or Jake Fromm at quarterback for New York. But it's also a total of 43 in this game. We're going to get to the Giants in a minute, unfortunately. But first, some major questions in this Chargers wide receiver room. As of this taping, it is sounding like Keenan Allen and Mike Williams both have a shot to play, maybe, despite landing on the reserve COVID list. First of all, let's just stop there.
Yeah, so we had to have like a legal summit in Slack to try and figure out exactly what, especially the Mike Williams status was. Keenan Allen's is obvious, players who are vaccinated, test negative two times, 24 hours apart each, can return. And he tested positive on Monday, right? So that gives him like the max amount of time between them and Sunday. Has a chance. We usually see players miss a game, but it's also usually players getting put on the list on Wednesday, Thursday. So has a decent chance to play. Mike Williams, on the other hand, we didn't find out until I think it was the press conference that we were able to infer that he was a close contact of Keenan. We later found out that it was on Monday. That's when they start the clock for a 5-day absence from the team, when they deem the contact to have happened, not when he's put on the list. So it gives him plenty of time, assuming he continues testing negative, which we got a report that he has. So both of them look like, despite, you know, they won't get really any practice this week, they're both veterans, and Justin Herbert's good enough to, like, They'll be fine. They don't need practice right now. So they can play. We don't know if they will. It is still in flux completely, but they are both perfectly eligible to come back in time.
I think it's looking better for Mike Williams, who can be activated on Saturday, has been officially reported by the NFL Network. We know like the coronavirus can be weird and you can be negative for negative, 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 and then go positive, obviously. But it seems like Mike Williams is trending towards being active, whereas Keenan, you know, like the big problem is that he's actually COVID positive, even though he's vaccinated, and it's gonna be very, very hard for him to return two negative tests before Sunday. And if you're listening to this on like Thursday or Friday, you should probably assume Mike Williams will play and Keenan Allen will sit.
That'd be my bet as well. Because, yeah, like I said, Monday gives Keenan the max amount of time, but it's been pretty common to see players miss like a minimum of one game. It's actually pretty rare for players to turn it around and get their double negative test back in time. It's possible.
Okay, so let's say that
it's been rather
unlikely. Mike Williams plays, Keenan Allen sits. Pat, are we feeling all right about a Jalen Guyton pivot in that case?
You're definitely adding Jalen Guyton in every like 12 to 14 team league, maybe even some 10 teamers. Basically, every time he catches the ball, it seems to gain 20 yards. I've actually haven't really understood why he hasn't been a bigger part of the offense this year. He was such an effective situational deep threat last year. He flashed that again in week 13, but you know, he's not going to be like a volume guy. And like, I think the pivot, if you're going to ask someone like Denny Carter, might be someone like Donald Parham, who I saw Denny asking for photos of this week in our for our CMS, so we could put a photo of Donald Parham in one of his columns.
I was gonna say I was gonna ask you about Cook. Do you have the floor, Denny? It's the tight end portion of this game.
We transitioned to Jared Cook because I'm a coward.
Man,
sorry.
Oh no! Come on!
I'm sorry. I knew this would devastate Kyle, and I want to apologize. Well, you know, both tight ends for the Chargers are possibly in a good spot. It's just that I had trouble. So if Mike Williams plays, which, you know, seems, I think, more likely than not,
it's just for Denny's,
I don't know if Donald
Parham's
role changes all that much. It was hard for me to get excited about a guy who last week ran a grand total of eight pass routes. You know, it's just not easy.
And yet you made our social media staff spend some of their valuable time.
I did, which is curious that I would do that.
Yeah.
I did. That's right. But tight ends have commanded a 22.5% target share against the Giants this season. That's a top 10 rate. It works out to 8.5 targets per game. Only four defenses have allowed more raw targets to tight ends this season than the Giants. Also, Keenan Allen and Mike Williams have dominated red zone targets for the Chargers, as you may have imagined, this season. So if one or both are not playing, then those targets have to go somewhere. And I would guess that Jared Cook and or Donald Parham would be the recipients. Keenan Allen actually is top four in red zone receptions this season and targets. So I think that both of their prospects, both the Titans prospects, increase. It's just that, you know, Jared Cook is running a route on like 67% of their dropbacks, whereas Parham is only running around on like 26%. So I'd have to lean Cook there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like it, but I mean, that is true. Like, Donald Parham is just, he's very clearly been a role player throughout his career. Just if you get XFL, DFS, or you watch the XFL at all, he was like just a man among boys. He's so good. As a bit, I want to get any of his jerseys, Chargers, XFL, whatever, but in a size that would fit him, because he's what, like 6'7", 6'8", something like that? 6'8". So I'd love to get, I mean, he's literally like a foot taller than me at a minimum. So I would love to get a jersey that fits him comfortably, because it would be a huge stress on me. Yeah, I mean, you have to say, if you want to believe in Parham, you have to say he gets scaled up a very significant amount, because they also don't only use Donald Parham as their tight end too. Like, Steven Anderson also gets reps as the team's second/third tight end. So I think it would be a bit optimistic to say Parham is anything more than like, he's been efficient when he's been on the field. Maybe he gets on the field more, but like, that's another player where like, if you are at the point where you are streaming Donald Parham, like, where have you been all year? How did you not get anyone better? And I love Parham. We just really can't project more than like, three targets.
There are a lot of disheartening offenses out there, and I would say the Giants are rising in those ranks really fast. It's looking like Mike Glennon as of Thursday afternoon will be the guy under center rather than Jake Fromm. Either way, Saquon Barkley is who I want to talk about. He hasn't topped 60 rushing yards all season. Given the environment and his production, Kyle, is he basically just, I mean, 100% floor at this point? It feels like the Saquon Barkley ceiling is just gone for 2020.
Yeah, I feel like there is I don't want to say vague, because it's a very obvious avenue to a ceiling, and it's that if you play in a league that rewards any amount of points, half or full point for receptions, since he returned to the lineup 3 weeks ago, he is second among running backs in targets and target market share. He is fourth in receiving expected fantasy points. That's it. That feels like the optimistic case where like, he legit could go out and catch 8 or 9 passes and turn that into something. But as a runner, we are in a tough spot with him. He's doing the thing that we've always known that he does. He has just such high potential to make massive plays happen, but then he gives up a lot of these like zero negative yard plays, except he hasn't done a ton of that. He hasn't done nearly enough of that big play stuff. I was looking through 73% of his rushes since he's returned have gone for 3 or fewer yards. There's a stretch, I believe this is versus the Eagles. Let me just read this off. Stretch of consecutive carries. I assume it's across multiple drives, but especially given the context of the offense, it's hard to project him turning things around. Like, there's no reason to believe we'll see it because the offense is terrible.
The Niners are at the Bengals. Points bet has San Fran as 1-point favorite, a total of 48.5 here. Pat, looking at those numbers, this feels like one of our best chances for a back and forth high scoring game. I mean, I think there are some things that could complicate that, but are you expecting that to potentially come to fruition?
Yes.
But he's practicing. Jamichael Hasty is like just a guy. He was entered the league with a changeup profile. This is kind of like my long way of saying is that the 49ers offense might be like too banged up for them to do their part in this game. We don't know what to expect from this backfield, which is like the engine of the fantasy points for this offense. As of Thursday, it seems like I would bet on Jeff Wilson being the lead back, being like a textbook grinder. Yeah, but like you can't count on like 20 touches from Jeff Wilson if he plays. Like, he's not good enough. He doesn't sustain drives the way Elijah Mitchell does. And like maybe some change of pace work from Jamichael Hasty. But the Niners, you know, they signed Brian Hill to their practice squad on Wednesday. It seems like they have no real idea what to expect. And the Bengals, it seems like every week provide a different kind of game script, like a different kind of in-game environment. Like, you can't like – it feels like you can't like predict what's going to happen in Bengals games, but I do worry about the shootout developing here.
Yeah, that makes sense. And meanwhile, Joe Burrow, I guess further complicating this, as we know, dislocated his pinky in the loss to the Chargers. So Denny, how is this one looking for you when it comes to the Bengals passing game? I mean, T. Higgins has obviously been putting up some big box scores lately. Jamar Chase doing exactly the opposite, only topping 50 yards one time the last 5 weeks.
Yeah, so I was looking at both the season-long numbers for T. Higgins versus Jamar Chase and then the numbers over the past 5 weeks, and I was a little bit on the stunned side to see that T. Higgins, over the course of the season, leads the team in targets per route run. He leads Chase in air yards since week 7 by a lot, 741 to 531. Again, that's since week 7. That's not, you know, over the course of the season. And Higgins has a 3% target share edge on Jamar Chase since week 7. So, like, I don't like to be reactionary with this stuff or in any facet of my life, but I was telling Pat on Monday, how do you treat T. Higgins as the wide receiver 2 in Cincinnati? Are we aboard the T. Higgins is the wide receiver 1?
We're aboard that the universe is fickle, and that if Jamar Chase had caught that touchdown last week, the entire narrative would still be different, Denny. And it never made sense, going by every underlying metric, that T. Higgins was not like a set and forget every week wide receiver 2. That's what he should have been. That's what he was not in DFS ever. People had abandoned all hope, all ye who enter here, whatever the Dante quote is. But Jamar Chase is still, man, maybe the most dynamic downfield receiver in the entire NFL. And they were always kind of bound to like regress back towards like some center. But I do think Jamar Chase still deserves the rankings, but even though he's hitting probably a rookie wall and has dropped some touchdowns lately. So maybe, you know, the guy who said he couldn't catch in the summer, who's laughing now, huh? Who's laughing now, folks? Everyone's laughing at me after he scores 40 touchdowns in 8 games. But what do you think now, Jamar Chase, huh?
Yeah, I mean, the one really bad bobbling, bobbles it right to the defender. Penei Sewell, if he's running 60 yards downfield, he catches that. I can tell you that much.
I knew it. I knew Penei Sewell was going to come into conversation here. I do want to say real quick about, you know, this game in general, and especially the Bengals wide receivers, as far as they go, it's a decent fantasy environment. This game has seen its total rise 2.5 points since Monday. It's up to 48.5 points. The thing is, the San Francisco defense is the 7th most extreme run funnel this season. And we know, unfortunately, that the Bengals love and want to establish as hard as possible. They have the 6th lowest pass rate since week 10. And any time that they've been able to keep it on the ground, Joe Mixon, they have done just that. So we are, I'm sorry, I hit my table. My mic jostled. I'm completely rattled right now. But we're hoping that this is a little bit of a back and forth. So maybe both receivers could get there. But anyway, T. Higgins, you're starting him. He's a wide receiver 2, I think, right now.
Joe Mixon missed Wednesday and maybe Thursday. I think he wasn't present for the portion of practice that was open to the media with an illness. Are we officially worried yet about this situation?
It's fine. You don't worry when anyone has a virus. It's fine.
When has you know, illness, I mean, it is in the fine. Past, let's say, 24 months ever really
it
been
is fine.
An issue?
People have been sitting through non-COVID illnesses even this year, which you don't usually see. But I have a hard time believing Joe Mixon won't play. I mean, Lamar Jackson has sat with some non-COVID illnesses, but I think Joe Mixon, he will be back.
Yeah, I feel like you take Jackson aside, even Jackson himself has like been illness, like has had illness listed like five times this year, and he's only missed once. And that's the very rare exception to the rule, which is players get past illnesses and play almost consistently. So I'm not worried yet. I think there's not really any reason to be concerned so far. And to me, I'm actually a little surprised this game has a rising total, because it does look like both teams just want to. I would understand why the Bengals want to hide their quarterback, who's, I don't know if anyone saw, his pinky was absolutely disgusting. If you are listening to this game and you play football in the NFL, you should stop. It seems incredibly dangerous for your hands, for your head, for your legs, all of it. His pinky was disgusting, and it was not fun to watch. I would understand why they would want to continue doing the thing where they establish Joe Mixon. The Bengals are 21st in pass rate, 31st in pace, just seconds per play. San Francisco, unsurprisingly, 30th in pass rate and 27th in pace. So it seems like two teams that are good at, and like as far as teams, you know, establishing the run go, they're both good at it. They both either have efficient schemes or efficient running backs, and then they play slow. So to me, it's not the best environment, but both offenses have paths to simply being efficient, even if not high volume.
Yeah, I was wondering how they're going to get to 48.5 points if each team has five possessions in this game. I mean, that's kind of what it boils down to.
All of those are scoring drives, though. They're good offenses.
All things considered, though, I mean, Brandon Ayuk was kind of quiet last week against Seattle. 3 catches, 55 yards on 6 targets. Kyler, are we going right back to him as a locked-in, no-doubt starter in standard-sized fantasy leagues?
Yeah, I think he's a perfectly fine wide receiver, 3-4. You're probably getting to him in your flex. I'm not the most excited, though. It's very clear that when Deebo Samuel's out, they have one just super mega talent. Like, I think probably the most talented tight end in the NFL at this point. In George Kittle, they threw to him a ton, and I thought it would be a career day for him. I think it was 181 yards, somehow only his third most yards in his career, which is absolutely nuts. So I think they have a super mega talent that when Deebo, who himself has been like truly a top five receiver when healthy this year, I think they just go to George Kittle as their pure wide receiver one, but the wide receiver two for an efficient passing attack in Brandon Ayuk. Yeah, wide receiver 3 startable, but I don't think we're going to quite see that. Like, oh, when Deebo's out, Brandon Ayuk gets a ton of targets. He just runs, you know, nearly 100% routes. He only ran or only didn't run a route once on 31 Jimmy G dropbacks last week. He's going to be on the field a ton. He's going to get to see a decent amount of targets, but it's not some sort of seismic shift in his role, sans Deebo.
We are headed down the backstretch of the NFL season, and the NBC Sports Predictor app, powered by PointsBet, has you covered with Sunday Night 7. We are giving you a shot to win $1 million every Sunday night throughout the rest of the regular season. It is free and easy to play, so predict what will happen between the Bears and Packers for a chance to win. Download today from your app store or visit NBCSports.com/predictor, and we will answer one of those questions coming up in a second. As we move to Sunday Night Football on NBC, it's the Bears at the Packers. PointsBet tells us Green Bay is favored by 12 with a total of 43. Let's start this one in the Packers' backfield. Now, before the bye, we saw A.J. Dillon get 25 touches to 10 for Aaron Jones, who was coming back from that knee injury. The snaps, though, were almost even, 42 for Dillon, 40 for Jones. So this week, Pat, are you expecting the touches to kind of level off as something closer to a 50-50 split?
I'm expecting it to go back to like 60-40 for Aaron Jones. And even though A.J. Dillon has been impressive, has been like forcing his way into a bigger role for the Packers, I think that was kind of more about Aaron Jones maybe coming back quicker than expected, at least to the public perception. Maybe the Packers coaching staff expected him back that quick, but it was a really quick return. I guess it was just the Packers not taking any game for granted. It was right before their bye week, so maybe they were trying to have their cake and eat it too, or get him back, but also to kind of limit him since the bye was on the horizon. I think it's been closer to the normal. It's tough to say what the normal delineation is in this backfield right now, I guess, since A.J. Dillon's workloads have been getting bigger. And since he's like been strangely kind of like taking pass catching precedence over Aaron Jones, which I really don't understand. But I feel like they still really need Aaron Jones's pass catching playmaking. Not that A.J. Dillon has not been doing that, but I think we're going to see something closer to like the norm here, where it is a committee. It's like a 1A, 1B situation, but it's back to like 60-40 for Aaron Jones. And I trust Aaron Jones on like that RB1 borderline. And A.J. Dillon still is a really, really solid flex.
Yeah, this was like one of the most difficult spots to do the rankings for this week, just because we don't really know. And like, as much as Aaron Jones has just been unstoppable for the past, like, what, 3 years now, just hyper efficient, both as a receiver and as a runner. Like, AJ Dillon looks so good. It's going to be hard for them to take him off the field. I did rank it similarly. I think I ranked Aaron Jones like maybe just outside of the RB1 range, like 13 probably is where I have him. I had AJ Dillon pretty high too. It especially helps that they're pretty big favorites in this game, so they should be able to comfortably salt away a lead. I mean, they're up to 12-point favorites right now on some books, so they should be comfortable salting away the lead, I assume, with AJ Dillon in the fourth quarter. So both of them, I think I'm a little more bullish on AJ Dillon than you are, Pat, but that isn't because I'm more bearish on Aaron Jones, really, maybe by a spot or two. I think it just makes a ton of sense for this game to be run heavy. You beat the Bears by a lot and go.
Well, it's run heavy. They're also losing a short area target in Randall Cobb, so maybe more targets available for the backfield.
Everything we've just said points to a relatively quiet week for Marquez Valdes-Scantling, but he does have 19 targets total the last two games. Denny, can you salvage any hope for an MVS day against Chicago on Sunday night?
MVS is still, I think, a pretty volatile option despite the 19 targets. I mean, he's caught eight of those 19, and the reason is because over those two games, he's averaged over 17 air yards per target, so that the volatility remains. He had the league's third highest air yards, third most air yards over those two games. And Chicago is, well, you know, they allow a little bit of everything. They're allowing the 10th highest pass EPA since week 10, and the 27.5 point implied total for Green Bay is probably good for MBS. I'm not super confident in plugging and playing him. I think it'll still require a splash play or two, you know, to get all the way there for MVS, but you could do way worse. I'll say that.
Justin Fields back under center for Chicago. His ribs magically healed, as some on this podcast predicted they would be after that Andy Dalton performance last week. It's also looking like Allen Robinson could return from his hamstring injury, but Kyle, are we averting our eyes? Are we staying away from anyone not named Darnell Mooney in this Bears passing attack?
I think if you include Cole Kmet in that, arguably you can say he is startable. He's not particularly exciting. Despite being top 10 in target share and top 10 in total targets among tight ends, he's only 17th in receiving yards. I mean, the Bears attack is going to be low efficiency. He is a low ADOT player. Those combine for him being viable in PPR, and that's really about it. We have over 200 yards in just 2 of 8 Justin Fields starts. And, you know, even Allen Robinson, frankly, I wouldn't play him. I can't imagine you would want to play him, that we know that it's probably like, you can't like really project them for more than 200 passing yards. And Darnell Mooney had already passed him in total targets before he got injured. So I really think it's Darnell Mooney and Cole Kmet, just because Kmet plays at a position where we're literally talking about like John Bates and players that really have no business being in fantasy lineups. So Kmet, sure, that's fine. Mooney, continue to start him. No one else, not even Robinson.
I don't know if anyone else remembers this, but it feels like a lifetime ago that Justin Fields was starting to look like he had turned a corner almost in terms of fantasy. He had that huge second half against the Steelers. This is just open to anyone, but does anyone feel like that, maybe not this week, but that guy could return for a handful of games here at the finish?
He could, but not this week. This was like the wrong defense for that to happen, where the Packers have just been suppressing the pass all year. It's on the road. It's like a horrible, horrible game situation, basically, for Justin Fields. You know, Allen Robinson's still not playing, which, you know, doesn't matter really from like a fantasy or production standpoint at this point, but it matters that presumably he would still draw defensive attention, make life easier for his quarterback. And Fields, he was finally playing better, like you said, but yeah, this does not seem like the spot to get back on the Justin Fields train.
Yeah, he has upcoming matchups against Minnesota, Seattle, the Giants, and then the Vikings again. So that's way friendlier fantasy wise than the Packers. I could see him being a factor down the stretch. Sure.
Pat, your guy DeMont really crushed it against the Cardinals last week. 29 touches, 141 yards and a touchdown. Obviously we expected that to be a good setup for him against Arizona's run funnel defense, but a little hairier this week against Green Bay.
Yeah. The nation, the DeMont nation, and You know, the Packers, they're like more vulnerable on the ground than they are through the air, but they're not very vulnerable on the ground still. They're like just like a really good all-around defense. And like I laid out with Justin Fields, like the game environment concerns, those are the same things for David Montgomery. Like, it's not as pronounced for him because obviously he's the premier, he's like the number one pass catcher in this backfield too. And very, very, if any running backs are playing more snaps than David Montgomery, he's out there for every play. So he'll be on the field, but it's harder without Andy Dalton than Justin Fields, because Justin Fields against this defense, I just feel like we could have like one of those situations where the Bears just can't sustain drives at all. And like, it's hard to see 29 touches happening every day. You know, it's hard to see that happening any week for any running back, but a lot of weeks, David Montgomery is a good bet for 20 touches. I would say, you know, he's going to get at least 15 because he's so important in this offense, but it feels more like the 15 to 20 zone for David Montgomery, which is still really good. That still locks you in as an RB2, but I don't think he's going to come anywhere close like to last week's touch or yards from scrimmage totals.
Yeah, to me, the Bears play way too many games as if it's the New England Buffalo game in terms of weather, despite it being perfectly fine, but just the style. And I don't even, it's not even that they don't like, you know, pass a ton. They're not throwing three times, but it's just that Fields, frankly, just hasn't been that good. And the reason, as you pointed out, Stroud, that he was looking like he was turning around, I like that you caveated with for fantasy at the end of it, because it wasn't like he was lighting up the league as a passer. He just started running all of a sudden. So really, that's like the only thing. Like, you're not saying, oh, he's going to throw for 253. He has a shot at 300. I don't feel like he does. It's just that I think he's startable because he is now running, but that's it. And it, as you know, Darty pointed out, it just doesn't make the offense really look that exciting.
I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm going to get bold. I'm going to go with Green Bay, and I'm going to go with 17.
It's the Bears going away to Chicago with a loss. Yeah, probably losing by at least 2+ scores. I think the Packers will win and the Packers will cover.
I feel like it's a suspect that I have the same answer. All of us are just like, hey, good team beats bad team and they cover the spread too. Nice and easy. I should do this as a full-time living. But I also feel like I just don't have much faith in the Chicago offense, and Green Bay should trounce them. So yeah, I'll say 15. Packers, obviously.
All right, Monday Night Football. It's the Rams at the Cardinals, a big one in the NFC West. Points bet has the Cardinals as 2-point favorites, total of 51.5. There are a lot of places we can maybe start here, but I think, to me, the first most pressing question should be around this Rams backfield. Darrell Henderson obviously was active last week, didn't play, sort of that emergency backup situation. We saw Sony Michel run 24. By the way, I watched the kickoff show with you guys, and you guys really had that down, because I was playing Sony Michel in a couple leagues where I do or don't have Henderson. Could have panicked, but I watched the show, and you guys had that situation pegged. So just want to stop there and give you guys some props.
I feel like we did. I feel like I was the only one who was hedging toward wrong.
We were never wrong.
I was like, I don't know, guys. I don't know.
No, that's not true. That's not true. I almost was wrong. And that's a pretty common strategy of mine, is to almost be wrong, but then let people smarter than me. I was like, oh, what are we doing? What are we doing? And then both Pat and I was John Wright were just like, no, that's not how it's going to go. And I was like, you're probably right.
Yeah. I mean, it is funny. Like, there's no way to say this. I'm being like extremely condescending. I feel like they're like, oh, this is going to be one of those where he's just fake active. And you're getting those reps very quickly too yourself. And you were still right. We were all right. And yeah.
I was easily convinced. Again, I have like low conviction in anything, a pretty thin weak spine in general. So it didn't take much.
That's actually a strength as a fancy analyst. You don't want to have take lock. You want to be weak spined. It's actually a huge attribute in this industry.
Well, we saw Sony Michel run 24 times for 121 yards in a score in that situation, the most rushing yards for a Rams running back this season. Now, Henderson was estimated as limited on Thursday, right, in the walkthrough style practice with that quad injury. If he returns, what are we headed for here, Pat? Do you have a sense of where this is going if Henderson is active?
There's a lot of weird stuff going on here, like weird media reports, weird coach quotes, weird roster machinations. Like, they promoted Mekhi Sargent from the practice squad on Wednesday, which they waited until Saturday to do last week, or Sunday maybe even to do last week, where they took it down to the wire with Darrell Henderson. This week they promoted him much earlier, which, you know, I don't know what that's supposed to mean. If it's This, like, I mean, clearly says something about Daryl Henderson's health, we'd have to assume. And then we're getting like all this weird buzz from the Rams media and Sean McVay, where it seems like they just want to come out and say Sony Michel is going to have a bigger role and maybe be the lead back going forward. But it's like very like tortured quotes. Like, they won't just come out and say right. it. Or Sean McVay was asked if he views Sony Michel as a lead back. And he said, "I think it's really good to get Sony going. I think he's a rhythm runner, but I think we definitely would want to find ways to still have Daryl be a big part of it." And like, you can kind of read that quote one of two ways, but it kind of reads like he's like very gently trying to say, "Daryl, we might give Sony a shot here, leading this like backfield." Where he's trying to give like backhanded compliments to Sony Michel, like, "He's just a rhythm runner." Yeah,
that's very the way he navigated that is very future United States Senator Sean McVay. Like, he was just so noncommittal. Like, both of our running backs are great. We'd love to get them both 40 touches. Some running backs might get more, some might get less. There's just no way to say.
Yeah, and Daryl has not been getting home, you know, even before the injury. It seemed like every week he was having like 55 yards rushing. As Denny says every week on the show, the Arizona Cardinals are a run funnel defense. They have remained like standard reason the Rams need to get going on the ground. Like you said, it was against a bad team, but a good run defense of the Jaguars, where they had their best rushing performance of the year. And it seems like they're trying to prepare the American public for a bigger Sony Michel role going forward.
You know, as you said, I often say that the Arizona defense is a run funnel, yet I wasn't on David Montgomery last week, which is very curious to me that I would miss that.
Yeah. Suspicious. The other thing I think that makes this a little weird, and I don't know if anyone has a reaction to this, but it seems like McVay is so inclined to go with one back in any given game and just use feature that guy. It seems almost unfathomable that he would suddenly do like a Sony 60-40 or vice versa or something like that. So how does that impact this as you look
at it? Well, he's had a little success with both kinds of backfields, where he was the full bell cow backfield with Todd Gurley. Then as Todd Gurley began his decline, he actually went to a committee backfield. This year, I've been surprised it wasn't more of a committee backfield, because it seemed like it would make a lot of sense to have Sony Michel like do some of the early down grinding and have Daryl Henderson change the pace, especially since Daryl Henderson hasn't really been doing a great job with the grinding. But yeah, maybe that's what we're coming to. Maybe he's like telling the truth, where both are going to be involved, but it's just going to be more of a committee approach instead of trying to get Daryl Henderson 20 touches a game. Because they told anyone, listen, they had durability concerns about Daryl Henderson. Now he's dealing with multiple issues at once. It would make a lot of sense, especially with the playoffs on the horizon, to kind of start spreading this work out more.
Yeah, I was going to say, they have been strangely committed to a single running back this year, despite in previous years, after the Todd Gurley peak, like last year, they had Cam Akers, and they still ran a committee early in the season. It took almost the entire end to get Cam Akers a full-time role. So I think they probably wanted to make Daryl Henderson the full-time back. So it does have like strategic utility to not bring in the guy who's definitely going to get a carry in on like first and 10. It has strategic utility to have one running back who can do it all. But I think at this point, after trying to make Daryl Henderson this three down workhorse, I have to feel like at some point they give up the ghost and finally say, we're going to split the backfield. So I have it like 60-40 right now and how I've ranked it and projected it.
I have another hour budgeted for this Sony Michel, Daryl Henderson conversation. No, I just wanted to quickly say, so with all of that in mind, Pat, hypothetically, Henderson is playing, let's say, where do you have these guys ranked?
I'm going to have Sony Michel ranked higher. I don't quite know where I'll get Daryl in that scenario, but I have him as like a mid-range to low-end RB2 for Sony Michel, kind of like the RB18 to 24 range. And Daryl, he's going to have to be in the flex mix still. Like, if we get reports that he's like actually going to play, because they're going to need some plays out of the backfield, because it should be a high-scoring game. You know, that's where the Cardinals' vulnerability actually is. Sony Michel is a zero as a pass catcher. It's like Sony Michel, it's hard for him to ever be like a true bell cow, since he's such a bad pass catcher. But Sony Michel, unless we get like a report saying they're going all the way back to Daryl Henderson, Sony Michel is going to have a decisive rankings advantage for me this week.
We've already said it. We're obligated to say it at least one more time. The Cards are a run funnel D, and they're very good against the pass. So, Danny, where are you heading into this matchup with Odell Beckham Jr. and Van Jefferson? Both found the end zone, but both had relatively low yardage totals last week. How does this look for both guys?
So in two games with OBJ, you know, being a full-time member of this LA offense, he has the second highest targets per route run, trailing only Cooper Kupp. Van Jefferson is just a little bit behind Beckham in that category. But I thought it was interesting that OBJ was second among Rams receivers or Rams pass catchers in total, having only really played in two full games for them. I think that is significant. Van Jefferson remains the team's go-to downfield threat. He leads the Rams in air yards and has an 18.4 average depth of target in OBJ's two games. Like I said, as a starter, as kind of getting the full complement of snaps in that LA offense. So I would say that Jefferson still has the ceiling probably over Beckham, but Beckham should have a solid floor here, unless the Rams really go run heavy against the Cardinals, which, you know, they could.
DeAndre Hopkins made his long-awaited return last week. Two targets, two catches, 32 yards, and a touchdown. Kyle, what's your outlook for him? One game healthier, presumably, in obviously a very tough matchup against the Rams secondary.
Yeah, to me, we had seen a pretty different DeAndre Hopkins through 8 weeks. That's 1 week, I believe, before he got hurt. So throwing even the previous two games, which he exits and then he comes back to a less than DeAndre Hopkins role, but he wasn't playing DeAndre Hopkins role through 8 weeks. He was 34th in weighted opportunity. I mean, that's like, there are more wide receiver ones and twos getting, you know, a higher weighted opportunity that's just combined target share, air yard share than he would. So I was already leaning towards pushing him deep into that wide receiver two range. It's a good game. It's already come up a few points. It's come up, I believe, 3.5 points now to 51.5. So it's a good scoring environment. And that was what was saving him early in the season, and it continued to do so last week. Through 8 weeks, he was fifth in red zone targets, fourth in end zone targets. Anytime they were close to the end zone or wanted to push into the end zone, it was DeAndre Hopkins, and he has a good touchdown total this year. But he's like touchdown dependent wide receiver too for me. He probably has a good chance of getting in the end zone this game because it is a high scoring environment, but he's not the DeAndre Hopkins of old. This is the worst target share. I mean, right now, if you include the two games where he was hurt and then came back from being hurt, he's got a sub 20% target share. That's like the worst it's been since he finally broke out, what, in like 2014 or 15. So he's not the same DeAndre Hopkins, but he can still get in the end zone. That's why you're playing him, but it's a very different look from
him now. Bleak times for,
I miss the old Nuke Hopkins, who used to get 17 targets when he fell out of bed. No more.
That's the end of our eight games. This is the part where you guys mention what is coming up here on the podcast and what you have going on the website.
Keep it locked on the rankings column, folks, for Patrick Daugherty, updated every day from now into Sunday.
Well, yeah, actually, Pat told me that he's setting his alarm for every 30 minutes during the night. So he's up 3:30, 4 o'clock, 4:30, so on and so forth. It's commitment. It's commitment that most fantasy analysts don't have. Anyway, I have my target to go to column on the site right now. I also have my kicker column on the site, guys. We're back to several common streamers in the kicking world. So check that out.
Pat is like some weird Silicon Valley bro who's like, you actually want a micro nap. You never want a nap for more than 28 minutes. So you need to keep getting up. And you know, he just lives that lifestyle now. For me,
that's awful.
Yeah, I know. For me, I guess by the time you're probably listening to this, you can check out the live DFS Building Block show at 6 p.m. on Friday, or catch it on the Pod Network after we record me and John Daigle, who you missed today, but you will get back on that show. So check that out. Check out the DFS Value Finder article as well. I think that's all for me. If you have a premium sub, you can check out my Dynasty article.
All right, that will do it for us. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, wherever you listen. Take a second to rate and review us as well. I want to say thanks to everyone for listening on the podcast and for watching live. Pat, Denny, Kyle, thanks to all of you guys. Good luck in week 14, everyone.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.